Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's Roundup. No special announcements or anything, so let's jump right in. First up, the game database has just been updated with the entire Japanese Game Boy library. And I guess we'll have to step back for a moment because I haven't talked about game database before. Actually, shout out to the Ypsilon who was the one who introduced me to it. But this is a database that has the exact screen title, cover title, ID, region release date, developer, publisher, number of players, and a bunch of different hashtags for the ROM archived. So this is an absolute deep dive database to search for anything from, hey, what's this game's box title versus what's actually on the title screen? You'd be very surprised at how often that's been gotten wrong, but as well as all the other information, including hashtags for each one. So if you're searching through Sega Master System, you could just search for hashtag 3D glasses and all of the games that support it will come up. But not only that, each region of each game and then what the titles are if they're different in each one of those. So it's really an extensive database of a whole bunch of different consoles, and they're always looking to add more. And this time it was the Japanese Game Boy library. But I really love projects like this. And I know this is kind of a selfish thing to say, but I love having this stuff in one spot. So right now you could do a search for light gun games, and there's one website I always go to that has light gun games for every console. And then there's a different website that archived all of the SMS 3D games, and a different website for this and for that. And while all of that stuff is awesome and I appreciate all of that, I like to have it all in one place and in multiple places, because as anybody that's been working on the internet as long as I have, because I'm a very old man these days, you see things disappear. So unless there's multiple places to find all of this stuff and multiple places to find multiple things, it's going to be lost over time. So I started checking out the game database. I believe I'm supporting them on Patreon now. And I would love to see this info, not only add all of the other info added to this, but maybe this backed up in other places as well. But with a handshake backup, I want to be clear about this, not cloned in other places, even though it might even be under proper terms for this. Even if it's not, I'd love to see the person behind this, Ryoga, I believe is how you say the name, and work with other people, even if it's just hidden. So like maybe Durf could clone this to the console mods wiki, but keep it private. So people still go to the proper GitHub page. But if something ever happens to the GitHub page, you could just turn this on the other one. Hopefully I'm making sense here. I know this is a lot for a first section of the week, but I see projects like this. And because of the experience I've had in RetroRGB and the other places that I've worked over the years, I see how important it is, but I also see how easy this information could get lost. So I guess what I'm saying is check out Game Database. It's free to check out on GitHub, so there's nothing to worry about there. But also maybe consider throwing them a bone on Patreon, and let's all think about ways to keep this cloned in multiple places, but you know, with us working together. So maybe even the Video Game History Foundation could keep a copy of this so that if something ever happens to just one of these places, all of this hard work and this info has been archived. So yeah, a little bit of a deep conversation for the first post. So either way, just check this out. The database is free. And I think if you get used to using the hashtag searches, you'd be able to find a lot of what you're looking for. And this is a pretty good reference tool. Next up, SCART cleaners are finally back in stock. And I will start off by saying most people do not need one. However, if you own a DataPath Vision Capture Card or any Extron equipment, you're almost certainly going to want to at least keep listening. And any tinkerer would probably want to keep listening as well. If not, just move right along. I don't want to waste anybody's time. But this is a device that I think could be incredibly important for some people, not all retro gamers. So at its core, the SCART cleaner is just a sink stripper. You plug your SCART cable in, it has a D-sub connector out, but the RGB signals are not being changed. The sink is just being cleaned and amplified for use in RGBS D-sub style devices. So basically, Extron equipment, everything except the crosspoints requires not only clean sync, but high voltage TTL sync. And crosspoints can work with 75 ohm C-sync, but not Luma, and also not composite video as sync. So this might be something that you could use for that. Also, if you're using a DataPath Vision capture card and you want to do direct RGB capture, which sometimes is a really handy tool, other times you'd really be better off getting a Tink, either 5X or 4K, or even an OSSC, depending on your needs. But if you do want to do direct capture, this does both the sync filtering as well as adding a switchable low-pass filter. And if you're doing any kind of overscaling, you might not need that, but it's still a really handy tool that I think is kind of crucial for direct capture and maybe some other applications. I didn't mention it in the live stream, but there's also a way to use NEC, I think NEC and a couple of other brand flat panel monitors with RGB SCART, but you would still need the same sync filtering and low pass filter, but you're still talking about old LCD panels. So while it's absolutely great for having a benchtop test for modders and stuff like that, those are not monitors I would tell you all to hunt down. In fact, any newer monitor with a scaler would be a much, much better idea. But basically, this was designed originally only for use with the DataPath Vision capture cards for precise direct captures. So as a result, it's a precision device. And maybe you don't need that much. Maybe you just need a sync stripper. So if you're using a crosspoint, you can get a SCART to BNC with a sync stripper built in. There's probably a whole bunch of other devices out there that would work the same or just as good for that. But if you are using a DataPath Vision, a lot of care was put into making sure that this does not harm the signal. And that also includes the audio output. This breaks out audio from the SCART connector to a 3.5 millimeter jack. And not only does it not destroy the signal, I use SCART cleaners when I'm doing MD Fourier audio testing from SCART devices. So anybody that's aware of MD Fourier knows that's a pretty bold statement, because if it negatively affected the audio in any meaningful way, you couldn't do MD Fourier testing with it. Same reason why this is powered off of a power supply, but not powered off of the SCART cable, even if your SCART cable does have power, because unless you're getting exactly 5 volts, the voltage that you send to these chips can and definitely will affect the output. I believe I showed that in the live stream I did. So if you're looking for a precision sync stripper, that's some stupid thing to say, I know, this is going to be definitely for you. And, you know, an Extron 203, Extron RGB interfaces, maybe the crosspoints, not really necessary. DataPath Vision capture cards, Epiphan capture cards for direct vision. This is a tool that you should definitely have. Also, if you're like some of the awesome people that participate in the weekly Q&As and you're constantly plugging stuff into stuff, this will probably solve a lot of your issues as well. But, and I mean this with love and respect, most other people probably don't need one. So I always try to be very clear about this stuff. And if this was a $5 device, I'd say, throw it in your toolbox. You could probably use it. But it's not cheap to make anything with connectors on it. And I wanted a really nice 3D printed case, thanks to Greg from Laser Bear. So if you want to buy one, the link is in the description. There's probably going to be a UK reseller soon. Right now, it's coming from the US, but they're in stock. This is not a pre-order. And if you want to build your own, check out the main SCART cleaner page. You could have one made. You could have it made from a PCB assembly factory. You could try to have a bunch made and sell them yourself if you really want to. But anybody that remembers the ads I did last year about how to do PC assembly knows that unless you have experience with this, it's way harder than you think. So if you really just want 2 or 3 of these and you think you're going to save money by making your own, you're not. Yeah, maybe you will, but the amount of time you have put into doing that, you would have been better off just buying these directly. So if you want a lot more information that's very nicely laid out, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I think I did a good job on it, check out the SCART cleaner page on the website. If you want a long, rambly, but very detailed deep dive, check out the live stream I did, because I proved all of the stuff that I just told in detail with examples of all of it. And I really originally meant to make this a high production 10-minute video, but I just didn't have time. And with respect, if I did have time to make a higher production video, I would want it to be about a product that would affect a lot more people. And the SCART cleaner, there are people listening right now that are going, stop talking, I already bought one. This is exactly what I need to solve my problems. Perfect. And everybody else is going, why are you still talking about this? I don't need one. So I just, you know, time is the thing I have the least of these days. And I just wanted to try to get this product out there. So, you know, this is probably a perfect thing for a lot of people. So please check out the page if you need one, and links for everything are right there.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Next up is an absolutely massively important project for archiving original Xbox software. It's called XCAT, and I'm just going to read right off of Durf's post because there's no way that I would be able to describe the Xbox Content Archive tool better than Durf. This is a tool that allows anyone to participate directly in preservation for the original Xbox. With a modded or even unmodded original Xbox, you could run this app, and by following the on-screen prompts, it'll scan your hard drive for unarchived content, DLC, dashboard skins, Xbox Live files, and stuff like that, and upload only the stuff that's not already archived to the XCAT team for processing. So this is very simple. It requires no technical knowledge and even runs on an unmodded Xbox via the endgame exploit. So this is essentially, if you care even a little bit about this and you have an original Xbox, just run the tool. And if you have everything you have has already been archived, it probably only take a few seconds. If not, you could upload it. But this is a great way to make sure that all of the digital only stuff that's been out there gets saved, so it's not just lost to time. And I really hope that the developers of XCAT would help other people in other game console communities to do the same thing, so we could preserve all of the stuff out there that's definitely going to get lost. And, you know, I'm not going to get into a whole discussion on preservation. I think people who understand the history of certain things knows how important it is. But even if you don't get it, the stuff like this is free and it's a help. So if you have a few moments to do it, just do it. So definitely check out Durf's post for more information. And I'm really impressed at this project. And I just think it's such an easy and cool way to make sure a lot of hard work doesn't get lost to time. Next up, Analog just released a new firmware for the Duo that adds a bunch of fixes for audio stuff, some improvements to the composite video palette, and fixed some issues and crashes affecting CD stability and a whole bunch of different games, and including fixes for Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, which had, I think, a bunch of audio-video sync issues. I don't believe there's DAC support yet. I could have been wrong about that one. I don't have a Duo to test, so I could have been wrong about that, but I think I remember hearing people say that wasn't added and something that people were wondering when it's coming. So I think this is just like a bug fix update for the most part, and hopefully, you know, new features like that might be coming soon. But if you'd like more info on this, definitely check out Andrew's post and, of course, My Life in Gaming Duo video. I watched that. I really liked it. I thought it was a very good assessment of the console. So check it out if you're interested. And if you own a Duo, it just makes sense to load up the firmware update. Next up, Tito from Macho Nacho Productions just did a video about the Frog Boy Color, which is essentially a brand new Game Boy Color from scratch designed by the modder Lego My Frago that just uses the original CPU, RAM, and crystal oscillator from the original. I think I got that right. Essentially, you just transplant the proprietary Nintendo stuff off of the original, and then you put it onto this motherboard with a very nice looking case that's more laid out like a Game Boy Advance with the buttons on the sides rather than on the bottom. And, you know, with the screen in the middle like the original Game Boy Advance. It looked really, really cool. I absolutely loved the whole thing, how it came together. It looks like it's a very comfortable console. The only thing that immediately stuck out is the volume knob looks like it would be very uncomfortable, which I hate to throw a negative onto such a cool looking product, but maybe the developer would figure out a way to move it to the side or far out of the way, maybe around where your fingers would be on top, so you could always roll the volume up or down without being in your way. But honestly, if you're a fan of handhelds and especially weird stuff like the ability to have all original but on all new stuff, you got to check out Tito's video, because great job as always, but it's a really cool project. And even if you're like me and you're not so into handhelds, I think you would probably appreciate the video and the work that Lego My Frago put in there. So check it out if you're interested. An English translation patch was just released for the PS1 Japanese exclusive platformer game Ganabare Goemon Odio Daikatan. Positive I screwed that up, but I'm still trying to get better with my Japanese pronunciation. But this is essentially a 2D side-scrolling action platformer that's part of the Goemon series. And Jimmy Hoppe even did a pretty deep dive video on this a couple years ago. And I remember watching it and thinking, that looks kind of cool. That looks like what I would want to see from a PlayStation 1 style 2D game, but there was no English translation until now. Now you're able to do that. And I believe it was done by the romhacking.net member Ace Diaz. I'm terrible with pronunciation, so once again, I apologize if I got that wrong. But honestly, it just seems really cool. And if you're into the Goemon series, it's probably a must try, unless you speak Japanese and you've already played it. But I know I sound like a broken record, but I am so appreciative of anybody who works on these translation patches, because it really does just open up essentially a brand new game to an audience that would have possibly loved it, but never had the opportunity to. So check out Donald's post if you want screenshots, a link to the patch, and a demo of the English translation of the game being played. But it's pretty cool for Goemon fans. Yoi, the creator of the Retro is Cool cases, has just opened pre-orders on PlayStation 2 replacement shells. These, at the moment, will only fit the 5000 and 5500 series models. However, a future version would be compatible with the 3000, the 3X series models. And the colors that you'll have a choice of are opaque white, transparent black, white, red, or purple. So all those are transparent except the solid white one. The price is $99, and people who order before May 15th will also get a free matching vertical stand as well, which will be available separately afterwards. It comes with basically all of the parts that you would need, including the feet that go into the bottom and everything else. So this is a complete kit. It's not like you're going to have parts that mismatch or anything like that. And the only other thing I'll add to this is you get what you pay for. And I think in the past year, it's really become clear why some injection molded shells are much more expensive than others. Because anybody who's ever seen the low quality shells, you see that and feel that thin and brittle plastic. You see all the blemishes and swirls that are a result of just cheap manufacturing. And sometimes that's fine. If you're looking to get the cheapest shells out there for a product where aesthetics doesn't matter, cool, I'm 100% behind that. No reason to charge your customers more if you don't need it. But if somebody's buying a replacement shell for a console, they're either replacing something that's been badly scuffed up so they'd like it to look nice, otherwise why not just leave your scuffed up shell? Or you want to add a new clear shell to it. Maybe you're putting an HDMI kit or a new mod chip in there and you want to be able to see through or something like that. So for me personally, when it comes to stuff like this, I would always rather spend a little more knowing I'm getting something that's as high quality as Yoi has always made than buy some AliExpress junk. But there is AliExpress junk out there, I believe, for the 3000 series models. So if you want to cheap out and buy those, it's not a clone. It's because they were out first. That's fine. I'm certainly not going to look down on anybody for that, especially if they're on a budget and they just want to replace a broken shell. But if quality is important to you, this is the one you're going to want to buy. And also, you get to support Yowie, who makes awesome shells. So the more we support these creators, the more we get more shells. So if this one gets fully funded, maybe we'll get a really high-quality slim version. I've always wanted one for the later model consoles like the PS3, where maybe somebody makes a custom shell that you could put a much bigger fan in so it could be quieter and move more air. I don't know. I think while there are a lot of replacement shells out there, there's also a lot of room for more. So hopefully we could keep supporting creators like Yowie and Retro Gamer Store, RGR, to make sure that they keep making these things so we could keep getting high quality stuff and not thin, brittle junk that's out there. So check out the post. The links for everything you need are in there. And I believe you might even get a discount if you order multiples. So just check out Yowie Store and see if there's any other cases that you want. Now it's time for this week's Mr. Updates, care of Lou from Lou's Retro Source. As usual, I'm going to skim through and add my thoughts where necessary or where I feel like it. But if you want visual examples and more info, please check out Lou's video. First up, the Super Attract Mode script that can load random games just to kind of have something cool going on in the background can now also load games from the DOS 0 MHz collection. So if you want those as part of it, you could enable that. Next up, the Tap2's online label designer was just updated to include the search engine from the gamesdatabase.net. And there's also a couple of holographic label sets for some consoles that were finished. So I'll get into more of those in the future because I definitely want to do a video on that and link to all of this awesome stuff. So just for everybody working on that, please keep going. It's really freaking awesome. The next game on the Mr. FPGA Discord challenge is Bubble Symphony on the Sega Saturn. It's a single credit score challenge and goes till April 8th. Next up, the NES Core is now working on the Mystex project, and there's some limitations like no save states or PAL NTSC support, and the default 256 megabytes of RAM from the FPGA board is now usable, whereas before only 128 was usable. So basically, Hans is really moving along with Mystex support, being able to port more advanced cores over, and while we're not there yet, I think this is going to be a really cool step towards the next hardware evolution of the Mr. project, while still embracing all of the amazing Mr. software dev work that was out there. Next up, Hotego fixed an audio issue on some Namco System 1 cores where sound effects were too faint. So Simpsons, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Aliens cores. Also, Bubble Bobble was fixed, but that took a little bit more work. So thanks again to Hotego and the team for going back and fixing existing cores. The Toki core developed by Solal Retro Gaming has been released. It's currently only available on GitHub, so it must be installed manually, but there's some instructions on there if you'd like, so it should be pretty easy. There is now also a downloader script made specifically for the 0 MHz DOS collection. So I will talk really quickly about this because I just got this working this morning, actually, where you could go to the DOS collection and download each individual game if you would like, and then just extract those zips to your SD card. Or if you're running RetroNAS, extract everything to the SD card except the games and leave the games themselves on your RetroNAS, and that's all you would need. But if you want all of them, if you don't want to go individually and you don't want to sit there, you could have a script made, or you could download a script that was made that will download everything right to your SD card. Now, it's 30 gigabytes. So if you're going to do this and you have a RetroNAS, do it manually. Or if you're going to do it and you want to go on your micro SD card, make sure that you have enough space. But that will give you all of the games that were updated on there. And hopefully, as games are added, this could scan and only download what's needed. So running it in the future will hopefully be a pretty quick and relatively small update. But anyway, appreciate Christoph Helms, I believe, was the developer that made this. I apologize, Chris, if I'm getting that wrong. But so thanks for your work, and it's very cool. And it's great to just load a DOS game. It really is as easy as you just go to the DOS games prompt, which is just the same place as like arcade cores, computers, consoles. Now it's DOS games, and you just load your game, and it's there. No configuration. It just works. So I think that's very, very awesome. I'd love to see any more games added. Mortal Kombat, of course, and some of the other fun games. Tempest 2000, that would be great to have the PC version just working. I'd love to have it working with spinner controllers too. But yeah, let's see if the 0 MHz team is able to get to any of that. Next up, Sorg has been implementing changes to the Mr. FPGA framework related to that upcoming 24-bit I/O board. And one change force disables 24-bit mode on legacy I/O boards when switch 2 on the DE10 Nano is on. So basically, almost nobody will be affected by this. There are some boards that will. So if you're using standard I/O boards or other stuff, you probably don't have to worry about anything. But basically, if you run an update and you don't get video anymore, that's probably what you have to do is pop the case open and flip switch number 2 on the DE10, not on any of the add-on boards. And lastly, the Saturn core has added support for SNAC, but at the moment it only works with a standard gamepad. But the fact that it's there means I'm sure light gun support is coming soon. So it would be very cool to play Virtua Cop on the Mr. via Saturn core on a CRT. So as always, thanks to SRG320 for continuing to maintain and support this. And also always thank you to Lou for keeping up with all this information, because I sure couldn't. And it's really great to have it all in one place just to be easy to digest like this. So please consider supporting Lou and subscribing to his channel, because I really appreciate all of this. Next up, Dick Shithouse just posted an update to his Atari Jaguar emulator called the Big PMU emulator. And not only are there updates, there's also a beta Linux edition and a Windows developer edition as well. So now you could use this on Linux. It's not totally stable, but it was working for a bunch of people who had tested it. And there's a bunch of different changes and bug fixes as well. So I would absolutely go through and see on the Windows side of things if any of these are what you're looking for. But also, if you are a Linux user, now it's very cool that you're able to experience this. So, everything Rich does is eventually public. This is still for Patreon subscribers only. And I got to just add once again that I am a full supporter of a model like this, because the bottom line is everybody gets it free anyway. But I'm a huge fan of limiting beta, or I guess paywalling beta, if you really want to go there and be that extreme with it, because not only do you give your Patreon subscribers or whatever service you use, you get that cool feeling of like, hey, I'm part of something new and I get to be, here's my bonus for supporting. But you also limit your beta test group to people who understand that it's beta. Whereas even if you put in big bold letters beta over everything, if something's released to the public, you're probably going to get a whole bunch of support requests for things that are already in the middle of being fixed. You know, it's too many people to respond to at once. So I actually think, not only from an emotional, yes, I get early access point of view, I think from a tech support point of view, I really like seeing this business model. But I also like seeing developers like this keep going. And it would be impossible to keep up a project like this without support from people. So I also like that this might incentivize people to try and remember to support if you're in a position to, of course. So if you're a fan of stuff like this, I remember that Rich did this emulation originally for the Atari 50 collection and then has taken it to a completely different level since then, all because of Patreon subscribers. So I would absolutely consider supporting if you're even just a fan of this type of work and you're not even a fan, as big of a fan of the Jaguar, because who knows what Rich is going to get to next. But I'm obviously a big fan. If you want to hear more from him, you could check out the interview we did. Just watch the video that's embedded, or just search any podcast app for Retro RGB White House. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does next. Before I go, I want to talk a little bit about a live stream that I just did with my friend Beast testing FGCOS and using GamePadla, that lag testing software for gamepads on Windows, to test controller latency. As much as I absolutely loved hanging out with Beast, I don't know if I would recommend this live stream for people, just because we grinded through a lot of very tedious testing. It's kind of like the VHS streams that I've been doing. You know, all of them by themselves, unless you're really into this stuff, aren't very exciting, but it's leading up to a much bigger video that I personally think, even if you're remotely curious about tape transfer, you would enjoy, and certainly far more than you would sitting through one of these live streams. And I think that's exactly what we have here. We have two friends deep dive testing certain specs and certain things. And when you talk about Windows updates and reloading, there's a lot of sitting around here. But the purpose was to see, will loading FGCOS, the optimized system updates, or switching from Windows 11 to Windows 10 make a marked difference in controller latency? And as far as controller input latency, no, it was basically the same on all of them. But we did see very substantial changes using the latency monitor tool before and after every single one of these changes. So while I'm still going to be doing over the next year, probably a lot of tests to measure the performance of what the FGCOS updates do to a Windows installation, I think this is something that's an ongoing project that's going to be a pretty big help. I do hope more people in the scene are able to jump in and do some more of this crazy deep dive testing, because this is way out of the scope of something just one person could do. But I think digging into each setting and figuring out what differences they make and why are going to be super, super important. And a lot of the focus was on audio latency, which is very, very annoying, but maybe I'm wrong. FGC people, please correct me if you think I am, and I know you will. But if I had a choice between settings that optimized audio latency but didn't touch controller latency, or settings that updated controller and display latency, but you couldn't really get the audio there, I would rather have that. Now, I do know there are a lot of games that audio is the trigger for what your next move might be. So this might be a situation where different people tweak their systems in different ways. So if there is a trade-off like that. So I guess this is just a very long way of saying I really enjoy doing the live stream, and I appreciate Beast's help with all of this stuff. Not sure this is the live stream I would tell you all to watch, because I try to be so respectful of your time. But I will be doing more tests in the future, and I hope other people do, because this is one of those things where if at the end of the year we end up with a short post in a YouTube short saying these are the settings that you need, might not seem like a lot of work, but it's going to take a ton of work to get there. And the final result might actually make a massive difference, especially for people on a budget who might not have the world's fastest PC, but now you could keep up with everybody else, at least on the latency side of things. So thanks again to Beast for helping. Thanks to everybody in the chat for hanging out for one of the least exciting streams I've ever done. But I still think it was exciting to me, Beast too, because we're learning a lot about what each of these modes do and how to improve your overall performance for PC gaming. So thanks to everybody. And I'm definitely going to continue on it, but I got to finish some other stuff first. So we'll see when I can swing back to it. Well, that's it for this week. As always, thanks to everybody who watches, listens, plays nicely in the comments, and especially thank you to people who support in any way, because it really is you who's keeping all of this stuff going. So thank you all so much, and I'll see you next week. This week's roundup is brought to you by Neo Paradigm Entertainment, connecting Southeast Asian influencers with opportunities in the West.